Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo, and this is the Tech Guy podcast. Just a little program note. A number of you have complained about the amount of echo that you're hearing on the phone calls. Well, it's really my voice echoing back through the phone into our system. This is something I am working on with Premiere. I record locally, and it's something they're sending back to me. So in this podcast, I've cleaned it up, and it will do that from now on. So you should hear a considerably improved quality. It does take a little bit more time to edit, but hey, we want it to sound good. So thank you for listening. I hope it sounds better. Please keep the feedback up. We really appreciate it. Not the feedback in the headphones, you know, the feedback from your emails. This is episode number 343 from Saturday, the 14th of April, 2007. Good day to you, Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy from the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California. At the northernmost part of Silicon Valley, right where Silicon Valley starts to turn into Wine Valley. Not W-H-I-N-E. Vino. Right up at the bottom of Sonoma County. Coming to you to talk about high tech. And there's a lot to talk about, as always, today. Let me give you my phone number if you'd like to call in. It could be a question. It could be a comment. It could be a suggestion. It could be a complaint. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO if you are alphabetically challenged. As I know some of you are. I am on my BlackBerry, although somebody told me how to do it now on the BlackBerry. Press the Alt key. And then type the number, the letter, and the number shows up. I didn't know that. But if you are alphabetically challenged, 888-827-5536. See, to me, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's easy. 888-827-5536, that's the phone number. What do we talk about? Well, it's tech, not just computers. Computers are the least of it, although they really are in the heart of all the tech we use. But it could be an HDTV. Many HDTVs now run Linux. They are computers. It could be, certainly an HD DVD player is a computer. Blu-ray or HD DVD. We could talk about cell phones. The most common computer in the world. Nearly 1 billion cell phones sold last year with a B. Do your best, Dr. Evil. 1 billion cell phones sold last year. That's a lot of computers, and they're getting smarter and smarter. It hasn't arrived yet. I just ordered the new Nokia N95, which I think is now, it has to be the, until the iPhone comes out, and there's some news about that I'll tell you in a second, but until the iPhone comes out, that's got to be the smartest smartphone out there. It's running Nokia's S60, the Symbian operating system, which is, you old timers may remember it as the Scion operating system, the first handheld, really the first good handheld computer, the Scion, became a cell phone operating system. Very good. I like it. It's very powerful. This Nokia has, it's a phone, yeah, okay, but it has an FM radio and it has a GPS, a true GPS. And in fact, for $10 a month subscription, you can get turn by turn. More and more phones are doing that. Some of them use a cell tower for location, but a lot of them have GPS. I mean, it's cheap to put a GPS chip in. It has a 5.2 megapixel camera, still camera in it. It does 640 by 40, 30 frame a second video. I mean, these phones are computers. I think it has 130 megs of RAM or memory. I remember it wasn't so long ago that 8 megs of memory in a computer was lots. Whoa. I have a friend now who has 16 gigabytes of RAM. Unbelievable. That's ridiculous. I don't think you can use that much. It's a Mac. Of course, it has to be a Mac. I don't think there's any PC that can go that high yet. Let's see. We could also talk about MP3s and, you know, MP3 players. Big announcement from Sansa and Yahoo. Everybody's trying to find an angle. SanDisk makes the Sansa players. Everybody's trying to find an angle on how do we get in to this iPod business? How do we eat into the iPod? What do we do? So Yahoo and SanDisk have rolled out a new player with a great idea, I think. It's called the Sansa Connect music player. Came out on Friday. The idea is it's a 4 gigabyte flash-based MP3 player, okay? Has USB. You can put another memory card in so you can make it a little bit bigger. I guess you could add at most another 4 gigs, so that makes it 8. So it's not as big as a hard drive iPod, but, you know, that's a lot. But here's the key. It has built-in wireless networking. It has Wi-Fi, and you can buy music from the device. It connects up to the Yahoo Music Store, and you can buy music from the device, subscription-based. I think that's how it works, so that you pay the subscription fee, and then for, you know, each month that you pay, you can get unlimited music, whatever you want. I think that's a great idea. If you're going to beat Apple, you've got to beat them at their own game, which is this integration between the software on the computer, the iTunes music store, and the player. And it has to be very easy. And this eliminates the computer. You just, boom, you go online. Now, unfortunately, I was hoping they would give this away. They oughta. You know, like the Razor Blade, but they're charging $250 for it. Meanwhile, Apple sold 100 million iPods. No wonder people want to get into that market. We could also talk about computers, sure, and the internet. A lot of what we talk about today is the internet. We even talk about gaming. Coming up, Veronica Belmont. You may know her from CNET's Buzz Out Loud and CNET TV. She's going to be our gaming commentator, and she's going to talk about a new game called Guitar Hero 2, which just came out for all of you would-be rock and roll stars. So, really, the sky's the limit. If it's technology, you know what technology is. If it's technology, then I'm here to talk with you about it. We talk about security a lot, too. And Steve Gibson has a security update for us. We have a lot of stuff. It's a very busy day. One of the things I want to mention briefly, and I'd like your opinion on, is civility. No, I'm not turning into Miss Manners. On the internet, they call it netiquette. And the internet has never been known for its politesse, for its culture, its class. It's always been rough and tumble, hasn't it? Going back to the very earliest days of the Usenet news groups, where flame wars, that's what they call them, flame wars would take place. People were rude and mean. Well, it's in every form of the internet, certainly on message boards. You see a lot of this rudeness. People say things they wouldn't say if they were in person, probably. I think that's the idea. You're kind of anonymous. You can get away with stuff. The other thing that I don't think anybody's mentioned happens is that a lot of people online are younger people who aren't as well socialized as grown-ups yet. That's normal. Teenagers are notorious for their lack of civility. That's just the way it is. That's a teenager for you. I was that way when I was a teenager. I'm sure you were too. It's just normal. You're grumpy. You're surly. You're trying to figure out what's going on. You really don't know how to be smooth and suave and debonair. And that's not the definition of a teenager. And when you're online, you don't know if you're talking to a 45-year-old guy or a 13-year-old boy. And so I think a lot of what passes for rudeness on the internet is just, you know, kids. That's one of the great things about the internet. Kids are at parity with adults. On the internet, no one knows you're a teenager until you do something incredibly rude and crass, and then people assume that you're either a jerk or a teenager. More often the former, frankly, than the latter. It came into the forefront a couple of weeks ago when a well-known blogger named Kathy Sierra got some really ugly, I mean ugly, and these weren't from teenagers, death threats. The people who were doing it thought they were joking around, but they were scary ugly. And there were pictures, you know, of decapitated dolls and just, you know, stuff that if you saw this in real life, if it happened in real life to you, you would say, oh boy, this these people are mean. This is bad. Call the police. In fact, she did. And she was scheduled to speak at a conference in San Diego at the O'Reilly E-Tech conference, canceled her appearance. She canceled all public appearances and kind of hunkered down. She was scared. I don't blame her. It was scary stuff. Comments on her blog, then comments on another message board. A message board called Mean Kids. So it makes sense that, you know, that people would be mean there, but still it shook her up. And everybody in the, you know, the kind of the thought leaders in the internet community kind of went, whoa, this is not good. This is scary. Some people said, well, wait, you know, that's normal. This is the, you know, this is the internet. Some people said, that's not right. It's inappropriate. A lot of people stood up to defend Kathy, rightly so. And now Tim O'Reilly, the guy whose conference she skipped, has proposed a blogging code of conduct. By the way, completely appropriately, he has been flamed and mocked for this. A lot of people said, oh, get out of here, Tim. But I'd like to know what you think about it. It's not a bad idea. Surely if you've ever been on a message board or a blog and you've seen some, I mean, just some rude, nasty stuff. Is a solution for us to kind of assert that civility will be enforced? That's what he wants to say. He wants a little badge that goes on the website saying civility enforced, or conversely, a little badge that goes on the website that says anything goes, and that we, you know, hey, if you come here, be prepared. He suggests, he has 6 points that he suggests the people who want to enforce civility, you know, kind of adhere to the blogger code of conduct. He bases this, by the way, on the blog her community guidelines, blogher.org. 1, we take responsibility for our own words and for the comments we allow on our blog. Seems sensible, although not always easy to be responsible for what people say in comments. Takes a lot of energy to police those. 2, I think this is really important. We won't say anything online we wouldn't say in person. Now, there are rude people who will say anything in person, but for the most part, I think we feel that we have a license maybe to be a little ruder than we would be in person online. We connect, I like this one, privately before we respond publicly. In other words, take it offline, talk, solve the problem, don't get into a big flame war in public. 4, when we believe someone is unfairly attacking another, we take action. 5, we do not allow anonymous comments. 6, we ignore the trolls. Trolls are people who actually try to stir up trouble. Some people have said, Tim, that's just censorship. That's Big Brother. That's mommy. We don't need that on the internet. Others say, yeah, maybe it's time we start thinking about that. What do you think? 888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. Your call's coming up. We're going to talk about tech. How about it? I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The tech guy. Hey, how are you today? 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. Gary, our first caller today. Hello, Gary. Leo Laporte here.
All right, Leo. You know, I'm pretty lucky in my neighborhood. These grocery stores now have free Wi-Fi in them.
Wait a minute. The grocery stores have free Wi-Fi?
Yeah, they have a cafe. The large grocery store chain has cafes, and on every street corner is practically one of these grocery stores.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and New York State Thruway has free Wi-Fi at all the stops now. So I'm going mobile, but my concern, of course, is security. Now, I've talked with those programs like Go to My PC and Log Me In, and they claim that I would be secure using their services.
That's true.
Accessing my home computer. But if I want to go outside of that, if I want to just, you know, check my email or search the internet, I found one program that seems to claim it does something like that. Security, I don't know about it. So I guess that's my real question. How do I stay secure so I'm at a free Wi-Fi spot?
It's a great question because when you're on your home server, of course, you could stay secure very simply by using WPA, turning it on the base station. But you can't do that on an open access point. In fact, that would keep it from being an open access point. So you're relying on kind of on their security system. My suggestion, a couple of things. First of all, if you're just doing email, You can make it secure by using secure email. If you use, for instance, Gmail, Google Mail, if you use HTTPS instead of HTTP, HTTPS:// to log into Gmail, your entire session is encrypted and secure, including your password. And that's really the most important thing to encrypt, frankly, because when somebody gets your email password, you're dead. You know, they could sit there at that, you know, truck stop or at Safeway and watch the traffic go by, catch the passwords. There's even programs that automatically will catch all the passwords, and then they just go home and they've got your password forever until you change it. You need to be at Safeway. They get your email forever. So that's something important.
I came across a program called, I think it's Jiwire, J-I-W-I-R-E.
Yeah.
They have a 10-day free trial, I guess I was trying, but I don't know if it's work. You know what I mean?
Jiwire is one of,
works.
Yeah, they're one of a number of companies that offer essentially VPNs over the internet. Here's my recommend. The one I use and recommend is Hotspot VPN, hotspotvpn.com. It's not free. $8.88 a month. But what it does is it sets up a VPN. And this is the way to be secure for everything. Again, if you're just going to do email, that's easy to secure that. If you're going to your bank or Amazon.com or any, you know, site where you're buying stuff, that's secure. So the only stuff they can see is unsecured stuff like your general web surfing. But if you want to encrypt everything, you put it through a tunnel. That's what LogMeIn does. That's what GoToMyPC does. They put it through a secure tunnel. That everything is going through that tunnel is hidden until it gets to their servers, at which point it's released from the tunnel so it can go out on the internet.
Would it work if I used, like, GoToMyPC?
Sure.
And then access the internet from my...
You're using your office. PC? You're surfing at your office, and you're, of course, you have whatever security is at the office,
yeah.
But between you and the office is secure. Absolutely.
Okay, good. Thanks.
You're welcome, Gary. Yeah, that's one... There are a number of ways to do it. If you've already got GoToMyPC, absolutely. Absolutely. I use Hotspot VPN because it gives you secure... It encrypts everything coming out of your computer all the way to the Hotspot VPN servers. So no matter where you are or, you know, wherever you're using it, you're secure. But it's for a fee. It's $8.88 a month. But I tell you, that gives you real peace of mind. If all you're doing is checking your email, if you have an account that you can secure, then you're all right. And as I said, Gmail does it. Your internet service provider may offer secure email. You should check with them. Make sure, though, that you are not sending the password in the clear, because even if the email is secure, if you're sending the password in the clear, you've done nothing. And vice versa. For instance, if you log on to Gmail with http://gmail.com, your password's encrypted and secure, but the mail itself is not. So that's better than nothing, but it's not the ideal. Use HTTPS and inquire with whoever you use your email whether they have a secure login, and not merely secure login, but secured transactions so that it continues to be secured even when you're reading your mail. Roland in Wayland, Michigan. Hello, Roland.
Yeah, Leo. I have a compact computer laptop.
Yep.
And it shows it's 40 gig hard drive.
Okay.
But I found that it has at least 8 gig of that is FAT32, the system recovery files.
That's right.
I've put it on, I have backed up my files onto regular hard disk.
Even that partition?
Yes.
Okay.
It had a utility to do that.
Okay.
Now, can I remove that hard drive, that partition off, and should I, and is there a program to do that?
You can remove it. Any partitioning program will do it. However, some things may not work right. For instance, the updates that Compaq does, or when you update Windows, it expects to see stuff there. You may have to insert a disk. And you may have trouble with some Compaq proprietary software, which might be checking there to see if this really is a Compaq. So, for instance, the system recovery disks may not work unless you restore that partition first. Compaq,
oh, okay.
And many companies do this. Compaq does this not merely to hide the Windows install files, which is mostly what it's doing, but also to kind of, there's sitting in that partition is information that confirms this is a Compaq computer. So that's a lot, 8 gigs, but you remove it at your own risk. If you remove it and back it up first, you can always restore it. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Right, because then the caller, I go to the caller. Right. Right. Here we go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy for the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California. This is a great place to be if you're looking for people who know about technology. And one of the people who knows so much who's up here in Northern California, she's in San Francisco at CNET at the Buzz Out Loud show, is Veronica Belmont. I've worked with Veronica on Buzz Out Loud, her podcast at bol.cnet.com, and also she's worked on mine at Twit. And what I didn't know about her is that she's an avid gamer. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, you didn't know that?
Well, I didn't know it right away.
You mean when I was threatening you to beat you in Gears of War, you didn't get the hint?
That was kind of a hint. And notice I never, ever showed up anywhere you could beat me, because I knew you would.
The threat was true.
I knew you would. How much gaming do you do?
I play video games every day, easily.
Wow.
Yeah,
I think it's generational, because, you know, I mean, there's the old saying that, I hate to be so sexist, but girls don't play video games. Is that not true in your generation?
I absolutely don't think that's true at all. I mean, I'm sure it's still probably less than guys do.
In my generation, women do not play.
But I know tons of girls that play video games.
Oh, that's neat. We should say you're in your 20s.
Right.
So when you were in school and college, and it was the PlayStation 2, where people play on the PlayStation 2 in the dorm rooms, and the college girls just as involved as the college boys?
Yeah, different games, though.
Oh, interesting.
I have noticed that there's definitely a difference between what kind of games women are attracted to as opposed to men. Not always the case. I mean, I'm on the Xbox Live forums all the time, and there's tons of girls who want to play Rainbow Six Vegas and Gears of War and games just like that.
The soldier games.
Yeah, you know, first-person shooters and that
kind of
thing.
You would think those would be kind of more aimed at guys.
They definitely are aimed more at guys, but I think girls get some satisfaction.
But you like World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there are a lot of women in World of Warcraft.
I think there's a surprising number of women in World of Warcraft.
Do we have numbers? Are there any stats?
You know, I did see stats at one point, and I can't remember off the top of my head now. It's not like 50-50 or anything, but it's much higher statistic than you would imagine.
If it's more than 10%, it's kind of a big deal.
I mean, a lot of those, but then you get there's a lot of women avatars for sure, but not all of them are actually chicks.
Well, in fact, you have a male character on World of Warcraft as well as a female character.
Correct. My main character is a male dwarf, and my newest character, though, is a blood elf priest. Why are you laughing? Dude, you're in my guild. You can't laugh.
Quiet. Nobody knows. I'm supposed to be normal. You're supposed to be the weirdo.
Oh. Right.
Anyway, you are, many people don't know this, you're a vlogger, video blogger, and you are the air guitar champion for video blogging.
Yes, I am.
I was very impressed. This is by popular acclaim.
I won a shocking amount of the vote.
Yeah, like 60% or something, right?
It was weird.
I'm very impressed, Veronica. But I think you've been practicing on Guitar Hero. This is a game that just came out. Guitar Hero 2 just came out and is very popular.
Just came out for the 360.
So it's Xbox 360, and it was what? PlayStation?
It was on the PS2.
Okay.
Originally. And this game is amazing. It's so much fun to play. I've heard from people who have played the PS2 version that it's a little bit different. Apparently, the keys when you're striking the notes aren't quite as don't fit in as much with the PS2 as with the Xbox 360 as they did with the PS3.
So you have to learn how to play a new pretend guitar. See, this is my problem. My problem with this game. If you put as much energy into learning an actual guitar as you do in playing this game, wouldn't you actually come away knowing how to play a guitar?
Well, there's only one note per strum.
You're learning rhythm.
Yeah. It's more rhythm than actually. You're hitting multiple notes in certain times.
So describe what
on the
this
skill
is like.
Level.
Do you have a plastic guitar?
Yes. It is $80. You get the plastic guitar and you get the game.
And see, I remember this dimly from PlayStation 2. I remember there was an Aerosmith song and it was very hard to get the rhythm right.
Yeah, I mean, they changed around the songs a little bit too. So songs that were harder in the PS2 game are now on the easier levels for the Xbox and vice versa.
Do you have it there with you? Can you play a little bit of it?
No, I don't have it here. I'm at work still. Unfortunately, I couldn't bring it to work with me as much as I'd like
to. All right. I would love to hear some Guitar Hero, but okay, we'll just have that for save that for another time.
But trust me, my hand, I felt like I couldn't move my hand. I played for probably 3 hours straight yesterday.
Really?
And my, it was like guitar cramp, I guess. I don't know. Carpal tunnel for my hands.
So
from playing Guitar
describe
Hero.
What this looks like when if I'm I walked in the room and you're standing in front of your TV with your little plastic guitar. What does it look like? What are you doing?
Well, you're standing there and you can either stand or sit. I prefer to sit just because it's more comfortable.
Okay.
And
you're the kind of the Eric Clapton style.
Yeah.
Okay.
I go for the classic rock kind of thing.
Okay.
And so you've got five notes on the neck of the guitar. And so when a note comes down, what you see is an avatar. Is that the game? You see is an avatar.
you heard that. I'm going to play a little YouTube of two guys playing Guitar Hero just so people can hear it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Keep going. So you see an avatar on the screen.
And you see the notes coming down on what also looks like the neck of the guitar. So when the notes hit a certain point on the screen, you're supposed to strum and hold the key at the same time. So you're basically essentially hitting the notes as they're coming down on the screen and trying to keep it in rhythm and trying to hit all the notes at the same time.
Do you feel like a rock star when you are doing
you
this?
You totally do. It makes you believe that you are a rock and roll star.
And is that the appeal?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the best part is that Harmonix, the company that developed the game, is actually coming out with a band game. Where you
have
the
a drummer
whole band.
And a bass,
yes.
And it'd all be standing there in front of the TV.
Well, another game that I recently got was SingStar Pop, which is a karaoke game for the PS2.
Now, this is a different, this isn't kind of what we think of as a traditional game. You're not shooting any, nobody's dying, there's no blood and guts, and you're not shooting. This would be a great game for kids, right? It's all ages, I would imagine.
Definitely, appeals to everyone.
And a lot of fun. And I think it's probably a good party game because let's face it, you're kind of dorky when you're doing it.
Yeah, well, it kind of has that same allure that the Wii would, for example.
Right.
I mean, you can get a lot of people playing. You're playing at the same time together. It's very fun. It's very interactive. It has all that appeal built
in. Let's play a little bit of... These are two guys playing Guitar Hero.
That's my favorite.
So they have these little plastic guitars, and actually one of them's got a strap that's got metal studs on it. He's obviously...
Oh, he's hardcore.
And... So they're actually look like they're playing this guitar. They're into it.
This must be the PS2 version because Iron Man's not on the Xbox version.
Oh, you recognized it very quickly. And so on the screen, you're seeing these guys play, and you're trying to play along with them, basically. Oh my gosh!
See, and when you hear the note go like that, that means you missed it.
You missed it.
Yeah.
So your goal is to have no drums.
Right, the song kind of stops when you don't hit the notes.
So here's a kid playing, this is Psycho...
Psychobilly Freakout.
This is an 8-year-old kid. Now, I know this is radio, nobody's seeing it, but you get the idea. Here's So there's the music. Wow. So he's got his fingers on the frets. He's fast. He hasn't missed a note. Oh, there's a bullet. So he's got his fingers on the frets. He's playing the frets and strumming. So you're almost playing the drum.
Yeah, and they have all different kinds of tricks where you hold down one note while strumming, and then you can move to other notes on the same strum. So you can get around the neck of the guitar easier.
I'm going to ask you the question one more time, Veronica. Wouldn't you be better off learning to play, spending the same amount of time? But actually learning to play a guitar.
But this way you can go on tour, you can learn all sorts of different songs, and you don't have to spend all that time and money and effort. You get all the glory without all the hard work.
Guitar Hero 2 is $80. It's for the Xbox 360, which means it's probably in a beautiful high def, isn't it?
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure if it is in high def.
Oh.
I can't remember. It looks really good.
You were so
good,
busy
though.
Playing, you didn't really care.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's all animation, so it's hard to tell anyway.
it's from, you said Harmonix?
Harmonix is the game developer, yeah.
And you recommend this for for everybody.
For everyone, yes.
I love it. Veronica Belmont's on the air at Buzz Out Loud. That's a great podcast, a daily newscast at bol.cnet.com. You also see a lot of video of her on CNET. You may see
CNET
her.
TV.
CNET
yep.
TV, yeah, it's great. And you, what is the URL to go directly to CNET TV?
CNETTV.com.
Easy to remember.
One word.
And G4, you're doing a little stuff with them too, I understand.
I'm on there every so often on Attack of the Show and also a new show called Free Stuff.
And she's joined us on Twitter. And we'll be coming in from time to time to tell us some wonderful new games that you can waste your time with.
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Thank you, Veronica. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Veronica Belmont, very talented young journalist, and yet, boy, she's just rocketed to the top. We'll hear more from her. We'll have her on a regular basis, I think. Christine Temecula, welcome. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Christine.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you today?
Well, my 14-year-old daughter and I love your show. We listen to it every Saturday, and this morning she's encouraged me to call you about a dilemma she's having with our new Vista operating software.
Okay.
We bought a new HP Pavilion computer about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and when she downloaded her iTunes software, apparently it's not compatible.
It's not Vista. Well, they've released an upgrade. 7.1.1, they say, is recommended for Windows Vista, although, according to Apple, there are still some issues that they're working on.
That's where our trouble is, because even though they assured us we have the latest version installed, it crashes our computer every time she opens her iTunes software.
So she runs iTunes, and what crashes? Just iTunes or the whole thing?
The whole computer, and it doesn't just freeze, but it actually crashes, and we have to reboot.
What is the symptom of the crash? Is it going blue? What's going on?
The screen turns black.
The screen turns black, and then what happens?
And then it goes blue.
And then it goes blue. I've never seen this in Vista.
And then it asks us if we want to upload in safe mode and those various other options. And it's happened.
It's rebooting. It sounds like it's rebooting on you.
Oh, spontaneous reboot. And only when she has started her iTunes software. It's never happened.
Boy, that's
in any
nasty.
Other
form. Yeah. Well, clearly there's an issue. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. If you're using the latest version, Apple does acknowledge an issue, although I'll tell you, Vista should never do that because of an application.
Really?
Yeah, that's very unusual that you would see that kind of crash. I've never seen it in 6 months of using Vista, ever, so including with iTunes. So I don't know what's going on. First thing I would try is uninstall everything, and including QuickTime. QuickTime seems to be the source of some of the issues with iTunes. So uninstall QuickTime and iTunes completely. Make sure the computer is acting normally now, including when you plug in your iPod, because my concern is there may be a hardware issue. That's much more likely, frankly, to have that with a hardware issue. And then, if everything's okay, install QuickTime first and make sure it's running okay with the latest version of QuickTime. Okay?
Okay.
I have to run because we're going to take a break. Hang on. We'll get back to you. Leo Laporte. I am the Tech Guy. Stay right here. I'm going to come back to Christine.
Thanks.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, helping Christine and her 14-year-old with their iTunes issues in Vista. It's a known problem. And by the way, it may not just be Apple's problem, because the Zune for a long time didn't work with Vista either. There, I think some of the issues, and this may be what you're running up against, Christine, it's hard to say, Vista has a lot of copy protection built into it at the behest of the Motion Picture Association of America and the Recording Industry Association of America. These guys are terrified that PCs are piracy devices, and so they demanded that Microsoft, which, by the way, didn't exactly stand up to them, put in a whole bunch of stuff to keep people from pirating. And, of course, as soon as you get music players or video players on these machines, there are issues suddenly. And that's what I think is going on with both iTunes and the Zune. Apple does not say that there'll be a sudden crash. You're not running 64-bit Windows, I'm sure, right?
No.
Yes, 32-bit Vista. They say that the ejecting iPod from Windows Explorer by using the safely remove hardware feature in Vista may corrupt your iPod. This is with 7.1.1. They say that iTunes may display text or graphics incorrectly. They say,
he says, yes, that's happening.
All of that's happening. Contact groups from Windows contacts will not sync. That's minor. I'm sure she doesn't care about that.
Yes, she discovered the non-syncing problem also.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem, of course, is it's crashing Vista, which is not good. With XP, the biggest problems occurred with QuickTime. And QuickTime is a required component of iTunes. It's the kind of the player component of iTunes. And you know, frankly, Apple has a huge incentive to develop iTunes for Windows, a lot of Windows users use iPods. They may not be the best developers for Windows. Who knows? So I'm not really, you know, they haven't been able to get a fully working version. Make sure you've got 7.1.1. Again, my advice is just uninstall both QuickTime and iTunes, and then just install QuickTime first.
Okay.
Make sure it's working first. It's been my experience with XP anyway, that the dual install of iTunes and QuickTime can cause problems. So just install QuickTime first. Make sure that's working.
Okay.
You know, it's not crashing. Play, you know, what's your daughter's name?
Brenna.
Have Brenna go on to QuickTime and play some videos back. You know, they have a, you know, music video thing. It's free. Have her listen to some music and stuff. Just make sure that QuickTime's working.
Okay.
And then if that's working, then go back and install iTunes. iTunes will say, oh, you already got QuickTime. I'm not going to mess with it. And let's hope that fixes it. Has she tried reinstalling?
Not deleting and reinstalling.
Yeah.
Since the computer is so brand new, all we did was install it initially. But what she told me that was initially, the first few times, it seemed to be working. But then every time thereafter that she put her iPod in and launched the iTunes software, then she had consecutive crashes.
Does it crash when the iPod's not plugged in?
She says no.
Aha. Uh-huh. This confirms my initial reaction. Vista shouldn't be crashing like that because of anything software could do. Software works within a protected environment in Vista. If you're getting a crash like that, it's almost always a hardware problem. But to try this reinstall. The other thing may be that there are issues with USB devices, USB drives, and so forth on that HP.
Oh.
And that one is a call to HP, not Apple or Microsoft.
It's very difficult to get anybody to give you help because HP simply said, oh, if it's only happening when iTunes is being dealt with, then it's just solely an iTunes problem and it has nothing to do with
it. We won't do anything. That's why you want to try plugging in some other USB stuff. Do you have a USB hard drive?
Yes.
Try that. Try other USB stuff. Make sure USB is working okay, because frankly, it may be an interaction between iTunes and USB that only happens when iTunes is running. I would make sure your other USB stuff is working okay. You're not going to be able to do this if it crashes every time, but if you ever get it running, you might want to restore the iPod, which will format it in Windows format. And that could be part of the problem. It could be that it's a Mac formatted iPod, and that's confusing Windows.
Oh, okay.
Another thing to try. Now, if you have another Windows machine that you can do that on, just when you do that, though, it erases everything that's on the iPod. So make sure all your music is on the computer. I'm sure it is if she's been syncing it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you can restore. What that does is it refreshes the iPod, puts the software back on, but also formats the hard drive, and it'll format in a Windows format. And that may also be part of the issue. But the bottom line is it's not working. iTunes is not working perfectly with Vista. Apple acknowledges that. But it shouldn't be causing that blue screen of death. In fact, I don't know. I have never, like I said, never seen that with Vista. So something pretty seriously has gone wrong. I hope that helps. Good luck, Christine, Brenna. John Pasadena, Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy. Hello, John.
Hey, hi, Leo. I had a question, Leo. What is the up-to-date latest in technology of making live broadcast video to a website?
Well,
I saw on your site that you had this guy who's doing a cam 24 hours.
Yeah, Justin.tv. That's kooky.
Tell me what that is.
We should get Justin on. I'll tell you what. I'll get Justin on the show. Here's the issue. And Justin has this issue, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're streaming video,
right?
It's big. Even a little. And he has a little screen, but it's still big. It's a lot bigger than streaming music. And it takes a lot of bandwidth to do it. And Justin TV, you'll notice frequently when you try to log in, it says, I'm sorry, too many people are watching.
Mm-hmm.
He can only have, I don't know what the number is, but probably fewer than 1,000 watch at a time. How many people do you want to watch your stream?
A lot. At least that or more.
Costly. Costly.
Yeah, tell me, what is bandwidth? Is that people watching or the size of the video you're sending?
Both. Think of it this way. Watching anything live, or listening to anything live, if you're listening to this radio show on the internet, you are, in effect, the entire time you're listening, downloading.
Okay.
And you're downloading whatever the amount of data is required. Now, of course, in audio, it's maybe, let's say this is 64 kilobit audio. That's 64,000 bits a second. It's not a huge download. But you multiply that times 1,000 listeners, it suddenly becomes a lot. Now, in video, a decent video stream, we're talking, say, 200,000 bits a second per person. If you do a little math, you'll see quite quickly that 100 people is going to tap out a T1 line. Not to mention the server. This is why you don't see a lot of live TV on the internet yet. That's coming, but it's a costly thing to do, and only the big guys will do it initially. Let's take a break and come back soon. We've got more for you at 8888 Ask Leo. Well, hello to you, and it's good to see you. I'm so glad you're here. Leo Laporte, on the air, the tech guy. Yes, your worst nightmare. A geek with his own radio show. 8888 Ask Leo's the number, but you know, when you need a geek, it's good to be able to call one, right? 8888 Ask Leo is my number. That's 888-827-5536. You got to be careful about the geeks you call, though. Did you see... interesting story in the news. Let me see if I can. I don't want to misstate this. I want to state this accurately. So let me make sure I have. Probably don't want to say any names. The Geek Squad. You know what the Geek Squad is? Best Buy has them, and it's a nice idea. The idea is that. There's some geeks on call, and they come to your house and set up your computer or whatever. But you got to be a little bit careful. Apparently, an issue with one of the Geek Squad guys, who I'm sure has lost his job. He came in to fix a computer, excused himself, said, I have to go to the bathroom. He went to the bathroom, came back, continued to fix the computer. Meanwhile, the daughter of the house went in to take a shower. After a shower, she got out and she noticed there was a camera phone on the counter. Oops. Camera phone on the counter. She noticed a blinking red record light. Oh, boy. Now, interestingly, she's quick thinking. She took the memory card out of the camera, brought it over to a friend's house, noticed that actually, she brought it to the Verizon store. It was a Verizon phone. And they confirmed that, yes, in fact, he hadn't recorded them or recorded her in the shower. The geek is now facing two counts of invasion of privacy and a count of child molestation. So, come on. That's just dumb. That's just dumb. And good on the girl for noticing and taking an appropriate action. I don't suppose they'll be prosecuted for removing the guy's memory. They caught him. Let's be careful. Geeks bearing gifts, I guess, is the rule. Apple getting a lot of attention this week. Its announcement on Thursday that maybe we're not going to have Leopard, the next version of OS X, ready on time. They said originally they would have it out by spring, which would mean they had till June. There was some thinking they'd release it in the middle of June at the Worldwide Developers Conference. Apple says, and you know, you've got to think there's a little spin here. In their announcement, they start off by saying the iPhone is moving along very swimmingly. We've passed several of the tests and we are still on target for a late June release. The word was June 11th. Late June notice. Release. And notice, by the way, they say we've passed several of the tests, not all of the tests. So they start with the positive, or what they're trying to spin as a positive. But then they drop the bombshell. We've been working so hard on the iPhone. Quote, iPhone contains the most sophisticated software. Boy, did they spin this. The most sophisticated software ever shipped on a mobile phone device. And finishing it on time has not come without a price. I believe that would be a double negative. Ms. McGillicuddy had marked him down a couple of points for that in sixth grade. Finishing the iPhone has not come without a price. That means it's come with a price. The price? We had to borrow some key software engineering and quality assurance resources from our Mac OS X team. Leopard's not going to ship till October. If you read between the lines, none of this is good for Apple. None of it. There's only a few conclusions you can leap to here. First of all, it's such a teensy-weensy company, they couldn't afford to hire more people, so they had to borrow people from the operating system team. There's only 10 of us here in Cupertino, and we're busy on the phone. That's not a good interpretation. Okay, let's reject that one, because it's a pretty big company. Lots of people would love to work for Apple, so that can't be it. Okay, interpretation number two, and I think the most likely, Leopard's in trouble. The new version of OS X, like Vista, is very ambitious and has slipped. It hasn't slipped 5 years, but it's slipped a few months, and who knows how much longer. And this, by the way, is confirmed from all the sources I know who are working with the pre-release versions of Leopard. This is not ready for prime time. And that's, I think, probably what happened. They're not going to make a June release. I bet they may not make an October release, but they certainly gave it enough time to... They shouldn't say dates, frankly. That's always a mistake. When you're talking about developing software, never say a date. There's another interpretation. The interpretation Herb Greenberg uses in MarketWatch. He's a columnist, financial columnist in MarketWatch. And he says, here's what really happened. Apple announced the iPhone way early, way before it was ready, because they wanted to distract the market from slowing iPod sales. So they announced the iPhone in January, getting a lot of attention. Huge bump to the stock price. It worked, if that was their intent. Wall Street said, ooh, the iPhone, buy more stock. Thereby ignoring the rumors that iPod sales were slowing. Wouldn't be surprised if iPod sales are slowing, by the way. They haven't had a new iPod in some time. No reason to buy a new one. And frankly, I'm sure they've reached close to saturation. Anybody who wanted an iPod's got one. And since you've got no reason to get a new one, I wouldn't be surprised if sales are dropping off a little bit. In any event, we don't know. They're disputed numbers back and forth on either side of that one. But Herb says, well, so they didn't want anybody to notice slowing iPod sales. They pre-announced the iPhone. It's not ready for prime time. Leopard's not ready for prime time. Apple's now stuck between a rock and a hard place. Apple says, we think it'll be worth the wait. They're spinning like crazy. We shall see. There's another question, I think, from Mac devotees, and I am a Mac devotee. I think many geeks now have become fans of OS X because it has Unix under the hood. It's very powerful, got good command line, great development support, comes with a bunch of languages. I mean, it's a geek operating system as much as anything else. You have to wonder if Apple's saying, well, we got to throw all our resources behind the phone. We're going to delay what was our bread and butter, the operating system. We take the name computer out of our company name. What is Apple's commitment to the computer, to the Macintosh? Is Apple looking at the success of the iPod, banking on the success of the iPhone, and thinking maybe Macs are not the future? Maybe OS X is not the future? And what does that mean for people who use Macintoshes? An interesting question. And an interesting announcement. They just put it out and they didn't make any. They put it out on the newswire and I hope nobody pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Mike in Santa Barbara, Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy. Hello, Mark. I'm sorry, Mike. Mike, not Mark.
No, that's okay, Leo. How are you?
Great. How are you today?
Thanks, buddy. I was just in the chat room checking it out.
Oh, yeah. What's your handle in there?
Big Mike.
Big Mike.
Yeah, but you know, there's a problem. Whenever you put an adjective before your name, means you got a problem.
Are you really Little Mike pretending to be Big Mike?
I'm not all that big. I'm just Little Mike. But, you know, if I call myself Big Mike, I'll probably feel bad.
Just like the guys who drive the big, long Jaguars. I know how it is.
Yeah, or Corvette.
Or Corvettes. So, Big Mike.
Exactly.
What can I do for you?
You can call me. I just laugh.
Hey, it's the radio. You can.
They were picking on me, huh?
It's a radio. You can be whatever you want.
Yeah, they were picking on me because my wife's going to be home soon, and I was sending you text messages, and I was like, oh, she's going to be home any minute. If I'm on the phone, she's going to kill me.
She's going to catch you being a nerd.
Well, she doesn't understand geeks, and the guys were picking on me about it. But, you know,
I know how it feels, Big Mike.
If you're a geek, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Because they just don't know. Hey, I don't want to take all your time up. What I'm calling about is a registry cleaner.
Yeah.
I can't find a good one.
Why do you want to clean your registry?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, you know, just because I hear how important it is.
Because you think it's not important. You're thinking, I have a dirty registry, and I need to clean my registry. Now, let me tell you how my position on registry cleaning. It is in the category, the voodoo category of PC maintenance, and there is a lot of stuff in that category. And the reason is these things are so complex, we don't know why they work or don't work. And frankly, everyone knows that after a while, Windows slows down, must be a dirty registry. And registry can indeed become bloated. That registry is that big blob of stuff. I've talked about it before. It's a couple of files that contain all the settings, all the preferences. And yeah, sure, it can get big. And it's true when you uninstall programs, often they leave entries in the registry. But I'm here to tell you, that doesn't really make any difference. A registry cleaner, the idea of a registry cleaner anyway, is it goes through your entire system, sees what you've got installed, then looks at the registry and says, look, you've got these extra things in here that don't match any programs in your system. You want me to delete them. And you press delete. And, well, you have a smaller registry, but you have a huge risk in doing that. You can very easily delete stuff that you need. You could very easily impact the reliability or performance of your computer. It is, frankly, a risky thing to do. I think there is no reason to clean your registry. If your registry is that badly messed up, the only solution really is to reinstall Windows. I don't think it's that badly messed up. I think it's just the kind of thing people feel like they feel better about. It's like how your car runs better after the car wash. My experience with registry cleaners is they more often cause problems than solve them. I don't recommend them. If you've got to use a registry cleaner, the best one, and again, I want to emphasize this, you don't need it, but the best one is it J17, J16? I can never remember the number. I'll look it up for you and I'll give you the URL right after the break. But it's not free. I'll give you a decent free registry cleaner, and then a better paid registry cleaner, although it has a 30-day free trial. But we got a break right now. You don't need it. You don't need it. And it's risky to run it. Coming up, photo tips from the top floor. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy.
Johnny B, are you ready to play some tech trivia? The category today is technological firsts. Well, let's get out our GTS, our global trivia system, and see what our question is for today.
Cables are essential for the transfer of data. The first cable to transfer instantaneous communications across the ocean was laid in this year.
And here comes the possible answers. Is it A, 1908, B, 1950, C, 1858, or D, 2001? Oh, and here comes a bonus question.
The first email message was sent in this year by Ray Tomlinson.
Was it A, 1964, B, 1971, C, 1981, or D, 1999? We'll be right back with the answers.
We'll have the answer for you in just a little bit. That's Johnny B of MostlyTrivial.com, a great little trivia podcast. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to have a little tech trivia. Let me get back to the registry cleaner issue. I have a very strong opinion that this is tech voodoo. You don't want to clean your registry. You're running great risks. I've also been one of those people that says, yeah, chill out on the disk defrag. Once every few months, maybe. A lot of people think, you know, hey, if I do all this stuff, everything's going to work better. And often it causes problems. Registry cleaning is a big one. I'm putting a link in the show notes. By the way, the show notes is the webpage associated with the show. It's techguylabs.com. I'll put a link to Fred Langa's article on registry cleaners. He did a lot of testing. We did some testing on my TV show, too. Our experience was registry cleaners, in fact, in no way improve the performance of a PC. In fact, in some cases, damaged it. And that's basically what I think as well. That's my opinion, backed up by some research. The theory is that you get a bloated registry with incorrect stuff in there and it could slow you down. And that's true. But I think if you get to that point, a simple registry cleaner is not going to solve the problem. He recommends, and I agree with him, two different registry cleaners. The free one, and this is to answer, really, to answer the last question. Since I know I can say don't do it, but people are going to do it anyway. The free one is called Easy Cleaner. It's from a Finnish fella. And it's a long link from Tony Arts, but it's a long link, so I'm just going to put that in the show notes. Easy Cleaner is absolutely free. But Fred says, and I agree, that the best one is a paid one. It's actually a great tool. Probably everybody who uses Windows should have it. The JV16 Power Tools. And it's not just a registry cleaner. It's all sorts of stuff. Software manager, startup manager, registry manager, cleaner, finder, monitor, and compactor. Files finds duplicate file. This is a great little doohickey. Free to try. $30 to buy. JV16 Power Tools. It's from Macecraft. MaceCraft.com. So, I mean, if you're going to use it, and I could tell you're going to, my suggestion is you not be too aggressive. It's going to give you a whole list of things to delete. Many of these programs, the good ones, will let you, you know, save the changes so that you can undo them. That's a very good idea. But of course, if you screw up your computer so badly you can't boot, it's not going to help you much. Back up before you do it, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's risky. I certainly don't think you should do it automatically. If you have noticed real slowdowns in your system, maybe you want to try it. In my opinion, really the best way to clean your registry, and it's a pain in the butt, but it's the best way to do it, is to reinstall Windows. And I think every year or two, you should just do that, especially if you're one of those people who installs a lot of software. Tries a lot of stuff. Just, you know, start over. Windows runs so much better with a clean install. Roger, Beverly Hills, California. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Hey, Roger.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome to the show. I'm great.
Thanks. I'm a big Leo fan.
Oh, thank you.
I have a question for you. It's not about gaming. It's not about anything trivial. It's about life and death.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yep. Get ready. I have just purchased a new vacation home.
Yeah.
And being a geek, I would love to be able to monitor it and protect it from my primary residence.
Who right? wouldn't? Absolutely.
And there are really three things I want to do. I want to be able to protect the house and control that via the internet. I'd love to be able to monitor the house you know, with video by the internet. And I'd like it to be Macintosh compatible or a system that doesn't require any computer at all.
Most of this stuff is Mac is web-based, so...
Right.
That's not going to be an issue.
Oh, good.
The camera's easy, and there are a number of companies that make them. I think the one I like probably best is D-Link's Securicam. And the reason I like the Securicam is it doesn't require any computer. It's got a built-in, it's a Wi-Fi, built-in web server. All it requires is a network connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then you surf to it from home on a browser. So
right.
I'm pretty now. Actually, let me look here and see. I don't think this one requires a computer. If it does, there are numbers that don't, including the Axis Cam, AXIS. I know D-Link makes numbers that have they basically have built-in web browsers.
Right.
AXIS.com is another one. We've used that one. The nice one about the security cam is you can point it from the web. Now, you said you also want to, what, turn lights on and off, things like that?
Well, I don't know how much of a deterrent that really is, but I would love to know if someone's opened a door.
Okay, hang on a second. We'll talk about that. We've got to take a break. Coming up, some photography tips, too, and an answer to our trivia question. Stay right here. I am the Tech Guy, coming to you from the Tech Guy Labs, and we have our special guest back again this week. He's from Tübingen, Germany, all the way from Germany via the magic of Skype. Chris Marquardt is the creator and host of the Tips from the Top Floor Photography podcast, two-time podcast award winner for the best educational podcast, and a professional photographer, a real expert in digital photography, and he's teaching us from ground zero how to take great pictures. Hello, Chris. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. How's it going today?
Last week we covered something, you can hear it 100 times, but really it's always good to be reminded of it. The rule of thirds. To recap, you divide the picture, the composition you're looking at, into a tic-tac-toe grid with one third lines horizontal and one third lines vertical. And you put there's no rule of anything, right?
Right. I mean, what I usually try to tell people is learn the rule of thirds and then
break
forget it.
Yeah.
And then break it. I mean, that's what many rules are for. Just break them. The rule of thirds is really a fallback thing. And I find myself using it if a composition doesn't really jump into my face and it's very obvious to me.
Do you use it for portraits? Like, I'm looking at some of your portraits, and in those cases, often the people are in the center, but not always.
Well, it depends. The gallery you're looking at also has images of the listeners of my podcast.
I'm looking at some of these, yeah. Like No More Turkey by Thomas Campbell. And there's a great, a picture of a kid, and he's had enough turkey. But the kid is on the one-third line. He's not in the middle of the... And it makes it work, and the turkey's also on the one-third line.
Yeah. What you also have to make sure is to take the background into account. The background of the image is always a part of the image, and our brain is really good at tricking us here. If you look at something, you look at the subject, and your brain helps, kind of does some magic to make you ignore what's in the background, but later on in the picture, this really jumps at you. So you better make that part of the picture. You better are conscious about the background and kind of build that into the composition.
My mother's a painter, and she always says you have to talk about negative space as well as positive space.
Exactly. We talk about positive space when we mean the subject, and negative space, everything else that is not the subject.
Yeah.
And one subject is usually enough for a picture. If it's very clear what the subject is, that will really help the picture to tell a story.
People want to know what you're saying.
Exactly.
Hmm? What are you trying to communicate with a picture? Is it now? It's a little different with digital photography than film photography. I mean, for one thing, and this is something people always complain about, it doesn't take the picture right away, which can drive you crazy.
That's right. That's a problem with at least some of the more point-and-shoot type cameras. Right. The digital SLRs usually are really fast. You press a shutter and it does its thing within fractions of a second and it takes the picture. With point-and-shoot, sometimes it might take half a second, a second. With older ones, maybe even 2 seconds until it has its focus done and it's done its metering and everything. So that really leads us to a technique that is really easy to use and that basically works with every digital camera. Let's look at more advanced cameras and let's look at focus points. Now, you can imagine there's kind of a grid over the picture that has all sorts of different focus points and that the camera uses to get the focus, but the issue is that the camera does select the focus points for you.
It's automatic.
It does everything for you, and it usually focuses on the closest thing that's under any of the focus points. So, what I usually do whenever I get a new camera, the first thing is I switch off all the focus points apart from the center one.
Oh, this is good. Let me write this down. So, and you'll have to look in the manual to see how to do that. But you change the focusing to See, I have zone. I guess it's kind of like zone focusing on my Nikon. So you just say, just focus on the middle.
I mean, just imagine a situation. You have trees, and through those trees, you look onto a meadow with a cow on it, and you want to take a picture of that cow, but the trees are closer to you. They're still in the field of view, and the camera focuses on the trees, and the cow is out of focus.
Right.
So then the next thing you can do is you can point that center focus point on the subject, and it will just look at the center focus point in this case. Many professionals use that technique. And then you half press the shutter. You will feel a bit of a resistance halfway through pressing the shutter, and that's when the camera will lock the focus on wherever the focus point is. So you keep that half pressed.
You're saying focus on this, the thing in the center,
exactly,
by half pressing it down, and you hold your finger on, you don't press it all the way, you press it halfway, and you keep it there.
You keep it there. So the camera locks the focus, and then we get back to the rule of thirds and the composition, because now keeping that half pressed, you can recompose. You can move the camera without it losing its focus. And then you can do your nice thirds composition or whatever other composition you want. And then you full press the shutter.
I've seen pros do this. Now I know what they're doing.
You'll see them all the time.
Point, and then they suddenly move the camera, and then they take the picture.
Exactly. Now, it might sound a bit complicated, but if you try it for a while, it'll simply become second nature. I don't even think about it anymore. Go ahead.
My wife was taking pictures of, we have in Petaluma, it's the old line and twine factory. It was built before electricity. It makes string. And they're shutting it down. They're finally tearing it down. They're beautiful, these amazing old industrial era string making machines. And she was taking pictures, and she was very frustrated. She was using my Nikon D70. She'd never used it before. She said, it's focusing on the wrong thing. It's focusing on, and and she was really playing with depth of field and things, and she was very frustrated. She's used to a manual Olympus, and now I understand, because she was manually focusing, and it's frustrating for her because the camera was doing it for her. So tell her to point, center the object, press it halfway down, and then compose the picture with your finger still on the button. Then take the picture.
Right. So the advantages are kind of obvious. You focus, you have the focus where you want it, you have the composition the way you want it, you basically get the control back. You basically tell the camera what to do and not the other way around.
That's how she wanted
now
it.
Now for point and shoot cameras, what we talked about earlier, when they take like a second or two to focus and do their thing, for point and shoot cameras, there is another great advantage using this technique. Even if you can't switch on or off any focus points, what you basically tell the camera when you half press the shutter is, do your focusing now, do your metering now, do all the preparation for the picture, and then when you full press the shutter, the camera takes the picture virtually that same instant.
Get it over with ahead of time.
Get it over with.
So I could take my picture, darn it. Great.
Right. So especially in situations, just think of taking pictures of the kids playing and running around.
And you
press that shutter, and it takes a second for the camera to do its thing, and the kids have already left the room or something.
Yeah, they're way too fast for a camera.
And of course, with the digital photography in general, try to get out of that habit to only shoot one picture per subject. It's digital. You can take as many pictures as you like for no additional cost, and then you just select the best one.
Take a lot of them. And if you get a good one, go to tipsfromthetopfloor.com. He's got user-submitted photography as well as his own stuff. He's even got assignments, which is kind of neat.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that in another segment.
Will you give us some assignments? That'd be
fun. I will.
Yeah,
that'd
be really fun. Chris Marquardt is the host of Tips from the Top Floor. It's a great podcast. Recommend it. Tipsfromthetopfloor.com. And he joins us every week to give us some digital photography tips. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
It's amazing how good that sounds. That's Skype from Germany, and it just shows you they have much better upstream bandwidth than we do in the States. Talking about bandwidth, last hour, remember we had a caller wanted to stream video live. He said, how do they do it on Justin TV? Let's find out. Michael is on the line from San Francisco. Hello, Michael.
Hey, this is Justin.
Oh, it's Justin himself.
Yes, it is.
Does that mean we're on Justin TV right now?
You are on Justin.TV.
This is a wild idea. I've wanted to talk to you for some time. I'm so glad you called in. Tell us what you're doing.
Well, I'm broadcasting my life 24/7.
And you've been doing it for a couple of, 3 weeks now?
Yeah, this is the fourth week. We're having actually our one-month anniversary party.
And you've got huge attention. Mainstream media, you were on the Today Show. The thing I want to underscore is you never turn the camera off.
That's right. The camera is on 24/7.
I'll let people's imaginations run on this for a second. You never turn the camera off.
I never turn it off.
Even when you're sleeping?
When I'm sleeping, it's pointed at the bed.
So you take the hat off and you put it on the bedstand, and then they see you sleep.
Yeah, actually, it's on a different camera when I'm sleeping. It's on a Sony Handycam infrared.
Couple of tech questions first, and then I want to talk a little bit about how this has changed your life, because I can't imagine what this might be to be under this kind of scrutiny your whole 24 hours a day. But from a technical point of view, you're wireless, obviously.
That's right. It's not wireless internet, but you know it is wireless.
How are you doing it?
It's over cell phone data networks. We built some custom hardware to kind of do the whole thing.
Is it the HSDPA? It must be, because it's pretty fast stream, yeah?
No, it's actually, we're using EVDO.
Oh, EVDO, okay. That's fast enough. Verizon's EVDO, or?
I can't say.
Yeah. You've got to deal with somebody, but they didn't give you any money, so you can't say.
Exactly, something like that.
JUSTIN.TV. So you can go, you're in San Francisco, you can go anywhere in San Francisco, basically, and you'll be on live.
Yeah, actually, anywhere in the Bay Area. I was at Bay Meadows last night and transmitting.
Wow.
So that's down in San Mateo.
Wow.
Yeah, we get pretty good coverage all over the Bay Area.
I'm watching you. I'm watching it right now. How has this been for you? I mean, it's first of all, when you came up with the idea, was it? did you say not me, no way, or did you say I'd love to do this?
Well, I've always kind of had a bunch of crazy ideas, and when I came up with the idea, I was working with one of my co-founders, Emmett, on a company called Kiko, which is a web calendar, and we wanted to do something kind of different and something unique. And when I thought of the idea, I was like, oh, that'd be really cool. And so we went with it. I was the one who kind of, it was my idea, so I had to wear the camera.
Was there a fight over who had to wear the camera, or did you say, okay, I'll do it?
No, it's actually pretty good. Yeah, I mean, everyone's kind of doing the job that they really like. You know, Emmett's working on the website. Kyle builds all the hardware. I get to expose myself. And Mike, you know, does all the business stuff. So we've got a pretty good segment today.
And we were talking at the beginning of the hour about streaming live video. I mean, this is a lot of bandwidth if you get a lot of... How many people can watch at once?
Well, right now we're on a CDN. And so
content distribution network. So that's...
Yeah, that's a content distribution network.
Got a lot of bandwidth.
A lot of bandwidth. We're actually trying to roll out our own load balancer, almost our own, basically, distribution network.
Can you hang on a little bit, Justin? I'd like to talk more with you.
Sure, no problem.
Hang on. We're talking to Justin, whose life is being broadcast live 24/7 on Justin.TV. I want to ask him if he has a girlfriend and how she feels about it. You stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. We're talking with Justin of Justin.TV. He's been live on TV. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to stop for a moment here because he's in the bathroom. We'll wait a moment till he's done in the bathroom. Yes, that's right. Live on the internet, 26 days, 12 hours and 50 minutes. And when he says he's on live 24/7, he is, in fact, on live 24/7, even in the bathroom. I'll just wait a moment. Are you there, Justin? Can you wait a minute. I have to press the button. Now you're there. You're done. Are you done? Oh, he hung up. Well, we'll get him back later. I guess he had to go to the bathroom. It's a little weird. It's an interesting idea, and they obviously are making money. It's gotten a lot of attention. There's a lot of people watching it, and there's a lot of ads, not only on the site, but in the video feed. And that's the kind of thing you need. He's talked about a content distribution network. something like Akamai or one of the big networks. See, those are the kinds of guys you need. If you're going to do live streaming video to thousands of people, you need a big pipe. And obviously that's what Justin's got. So if he calls back, we'll go back to him and talk to him some more. But meanwhile, we've got lots of calls, and I want to take them too. Steve from South Pasadena, Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Leo. Listen, I am finally going uptown here to get a home theater system for my home. We've ordered a Toshiba 65 HM167 rear projection TV.
Okay.
Got an Onkyo HTS790 theater in a box.
Sounds good.
So we're going to get it all in there. But where I'm hung up is on the DVD player.
Okay.
You know, I realize we've got, on the one hand, you've got the Blu-ray, on the other and there's the HD, and I just I really don't know which way to go here.
Yeah, of course, you're going to watch regular DVDs, too, and either one will play regular DVDs. In fact, most of the DVDs you'll be watching will be regular DVDs, since there are only, a few dozen high-def DVDs. And here's the problem. Half the movie companies are with one format, and half are with the other. So if you want Casino Royale, you got to get Blu-ray. But if you want Children of Men, you got to get HD. And there are only a few that have been released in both formats. By the way, the best-selling high-definition DVD now is, the first one to break 100,000 is this Casino Royale, the Bond movie, and it is Blu-ray. But, you know, if you look at the top 10, it goes down real fast from 100,000 to the bottom of the top 10, which is about 800 discs. So it isn't, consumers have not really adopted this high def format because of this confusion.
Right, and I understand that you can get a player that plays both, but it's very, very expensive.
Well, LG makes a hybrid player that plays both. If you shop around, it's $800, which is not terrible. The list is $1,200. Samsung has announced that they're going to do one by the end of the year. Now, that means there will be a price drop, but it won't be till the end of the year when there's competition. So you're stuck. Here's what you might want to look at doing. You get a kind of free Blu-ray HD DVD player if you buy a Sony PlayStation 3 gaming system. The gaming system is $700, but it comes with Blu-ray. If you had an Xbox 360 for $200, you can add HD DVD to it. So for about $1,200, about what you'd pay for the LG, you could get an Xbox 360, a PlayStation 3, both are high-def gaming systems, and an HD player and a Blu-ray player. To me, that's more economical. It costs a little, maybe $100 more than buying the list price than the LG. Otherwise,
one of the reasons we've delayed going doing this for so long is we don't like our kids playing games all the time.
Oh, then you don't want to get those.
Right.
Here's what I would, I would look. Disney is on Blu-ray. How old are your kids?
Well, the youngest now is 14.
Okay, so you don't care about Disney.
The other two are in college, right?
Yeah. I think the movies that adults want to watch are generally on HD DVD, but then there's a rare exception to the occasional Bond film Casino Royale would be great on Blu-ray. But mostly, I think, Universal, a lot of the movie companies are on HD DVD. Probably what you should do is go to Amazon.com or somebody. This is, by the way, another problem is most movie stores do not yet sell HD DVDs. So you go to your local movie store, and they're probably not going to have the format you want. You go to Amazon.com and do a search for Blu-ray, Blu-ray, and see that there are about, I think, 60 different Blu-ray discs. You can see which ones, the best sellers, see if the ones you want are on Blu-ray, and then go and look at HD DVD and see if the ones you want are on HD DVD, and then I guess choose one based on that. You can get a Toshiba, the Toshiba HD A2 DVD player. The HD DVD is very reasonable. It's $300. And that's, by the way, a good player. So that's the one I'd recommend for DVD playback, the HD for HD DVD, HD A2. Unfortunately, the Blu-rays are much more expensive. The Sony is $800. The Samsung is $500. So if you decide you want to go with both formats, you're going to be spending some money. Probably the LG would be the most economical way to go.
And I'm assuming all these are reverse compatible
with DVD, yes.
DVD,
yeah. That's right. So, and they'll be good DVD players. And as I said at the beginning, that's frankly mostly what you're going to be playing. So I would say that's the way to go. Don't buy a DVD player. Choose HD DVD or Blu-ray based on what movies they have. I'll tell you the good news. It looks great. It really looks good. I have an HD DVD player because I like the movies available on HD better. But The Departed, Superman Returns, that's both. Casino Royale, I kind of wish I could get that. Hey, Justin's back. We're going to get to him in just a bit. Unfortunately, we have to go through a break here at the top of the hour. And some stations will be leaving us. But for those of you sticking around, Justin, we'll be back. We'll talk more about Justin TV, how he does it, what it's like being on camera all the time, and the response. And I think he's making a good bit of money on it, because if you go to the site, Justin.TV, you'll see a lot of ads on the site and a lot of product placement in the video for movies and more. Obviously, if you get a lot of people coming to a site looking at what you're doing, no matter how mundane and dull, and sometimes it is very mundane, sometimes it's a little personal. If you go to a site and watch that stuff, their advertisers will come. And you can make some money. So we'll get Justin back on. Also, the answers to our trivia coming up in just a little bit from Johnny B. More of your calls, too, at 888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So glad you're here. Stick around. Well, a good day to you. I am Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy, and we talk about tech on this station at this time every single week, and I'm glad you're here. Let's get the answer to our trivia question, then we're going to get back on the line with Justin from Justin TV. Of course, your questions, too, at 888-ASK-LEO, but I'm dying to get the answer from Johnny B to our trivia contest.
So when was the first cable to transfer instantaneous communications across the ocean? Did you get C, 1858? Good for you. And if you guessed D, 2001.
I'm afraid.
Well. And for the bonus answer, when was the first email sent? Did you get B, 1971? Way to go. And if you guessed D, 1999. Wow, that must have hurt. Let's press info on our GTS and find out a little bit more.
It was called the Atlantic Cable, and it was laid on the bottom of the ocean by ships. It was used for the transfer of telegraph messages.
Within 3 weeks, the damage inflicted by high voltages on the cable caused it to stop working.
Really?
And info number two?
Ray also invented the use of the at sign. This was almost 100 years later than the first telephone transmission in 1876.
In Dutch, it's called the Appenstaartje, which means little monkey tail.
Ooh, I'm giddy.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for playing Tech Trivia, and we'll talk to you next time on
Tech.
That's Johnny B of Mostly Trivial. MostlyTrivia.com.
Objective completed.
And if you like it, we'll do more. I'd like to get your opinion of it. You like the tech trivia? Do you want more of that? Meanwhile, let's get back to Justin of Justin.TV. We came back to you, Justin, and you were in the bathroom. I guess that's one question. I mean, you take it in the bathroom and with you?
That's right. I pointed it at the wall behind me.
And do you have a girlfriend, Justin? I know you went on a date.
I've been on a couple of dates from the show, but no girlfriend right now.
And how do so people who know that they're going to be on Justin.TV?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's all people who I met through the site right now, so that makes it easy.
Yeah, because in fact, maybe you might even attract a certain type of person from that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't ask them too many questions about that at first.
But it must be a little weird for you, because when you went on a date, the word spread throughout the internet, Justin's got a date.
Yeah, it was on Twitter, and everyone was definitely watching and Twittering it. I said, you know, I can't complain. It's great publicity for us.
You become a star on Twitter. It's kind of funny. How many people do you estimate have watched this or are watching it at any given time?
I honestly don't know. I don't keep very good tabs on our traffic right now.
You may not want to know. You may be depressed. You may say, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me. You might get self-conscious.
Yeah, well, I think I've gotten over that by now.
Does it become just kind of part of your every... I mean, now you probably don't even think about it.
I think about it. I mean, in terms of like, oh, what should I do today? What will the viewers like to see? And sometimes they call in. So, I'm pretty much constantly reminded of, oh, I've got this camera strapped to my head that lots of people are watching.
You said that you're going to do this for the rest of your life.
Though the website said that.
Michael said that. Make Michael wear the hat.
Exactly.
So how long do you plan to do this?
We're going to keep doing it as long as, you know, it's fun, as long as people are watching. We're also, you know, planning on rolling out a whole network of online live casts of people, you know, broadcasting their lives. Maybe not 24/7, but we want to have a bunch of different channels that target different demographics.
Clearly there's advertisers. Right. I mean, your website has advertisements and there's product placement in Justin.TV. For instance, you've got an ad for a new movie coming out Friday, Disturbia, and I see Disturbia posters everywhere in your apartment.
Came out last Friday, and posters all over, yesterday, right? Yeah. We went and saw it yesterday.
Oh, you actually went to the movie. Did they let you broadcast the movie on Justin.TV?
No, we turned the camera off for the movie and played the trailer, actually, on Justin.TV.
All over and over and over.
Uh-huh. You got to see the trailer, I think, 100 times.
So there are some issues. I mean, you can't go to the movies. The Motion Picture Association of America would kill you.
I think they would probably not be too happy about it.
So you got to be... does that mean no more movies for you, or what does that mean?
Well, I think it means no more movies, unless we're probably, you know, have some sort of deal with them.
You can't watch TV either.
No, not really. I can't watch TV. It's hard, but it's actually probably better for me.
Yeah.
In the long run.
Yeah. We're watching you instead of you watching us. It's like Ed TV. It's like that movie where you're just on 24/7, except you know it.
Yeah. Well, Ed TV, Ed knew it. And it is really like Ed TV down to the location. Ed was in San Francisco. It's four blocks from where we're at right now.
Oh, really? So I'm watching right now. You're in your bedroom right now.
Uh-huh. I'm kind of getting ready to go, on a flying trapeze lesson with my brother.
Will the hat survive the trapeze? That'll be interesting.
Well, we'll have to find out. I mean, hopefully. We might set up a tripod and just point it at me, depending on how big the fall is.
I have to say, I noticed that you haven't made any effort, for instance, to tidy up.
Oh, that's not true at all. We've made lots of efforts to tidy up. It's just that four guys living in a two-bedroom apartment, those efforts are washed away in the top, you know.
Well, it's not the neatest of room, but it's not awful. I mean, I guess it's a measure of how comfortable you are on camera now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already putting my entire life on camera. I'm not too embarrassed by the audience seeing that my entire life is living in this messy apartment.
You think there'll be a long-term psychological impact of doing this? I mean, it's a little wacky.
I know. Honestly, I don't really know. That was part of the grand experiment of it, I guess.
Yeah.
We're going to find out what happens to Justin. Will he go crazy?
Well, it's 26 days, 13 hours, and 12 minutes, and obviously you're still somewhat normal.
Yeah, as I've ever been, right?
I'm really impressed by what you've done. And you know, I mean, of course, Jenny Cam did it first, but it was still images. You've used the technology to take it to the next limit. And frankly, I'm most impressed with the technology and the way you've got this thing working. Was that difficult?
Yeah, it was. Actually, you know, that's something that the Nightline and Today shows don't really pick up on, but because the easy story is, oh, this guy put a camera on his head.
Right.
But actually, you know, we spent 6 months building and perfecting the technology and testing it in San Francisco. We had to build our own custom hardware solution on top of, you know, what exists out there.
So you have a camera. It looks like a kind of a lipstick cam on a hat. Does it have a web server built into it? What exactly is going on the hat?
Oh, the hat. So most people don't realize this, but I actually carry around a backpack around with me.
Yeah. I saw you packing that up a little bit earlier.
Right, that was just the battery for the backpack. So the backpack has a bunch of batteries in it, and the camera is just a kind of off-the-shelf thing from Viosport that's a composite camera. So, you know, it's for outdoor sports and snowboarding, mountain biking, that type of thing. And you know, we've mounted it to a hat, our own special ratcheting system that lets me put it up, point the camera at the ceiling when I'm in the bathroom. And other than that, in the backpack, there's a kind of a custom transmitter that we built around EVDO.
So it's broadcasting. It's sending a stream out to EVDO, and then your content distribution network is picking up the stream and rebroadcasting it through the website. Yeah, but it's not a web server on your butt. It's something else.
No, that's right. We've kind of built our own software around multiplexing over multiple modems.
And who is we? Is it Justin, Emmett, Michael, and Kyle, the four on the website? Is that the roommates?
The company is the four of us. You know, we have a producer now, but really it's, you know, we're the four co-founders and we built everything that, you know, every advertising deal went through Michael, every hardware, all the hardware and software built by Emmett and Kyle.
Wow. Well, I wish you luck. You know, obviously, I mean, my friend, Amber MacArthur, I know just interviewed you for her TV show Web Nation.
Yeah, that was really fun.
She's addicted to it. She can't stop watching you.
That's awesome.
So you have a very beautiful woman who is actually watching you 24 hours a day. To me, that would make me a little nervous. But Justin, whatever turns you on, I'm really glad you could call in and talk to us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, good luck to you. And we'll be watching, literally, quite right. Literally.
Awesome. Bye, Leo.
Take care, Justin. Justin.tv. It creeps me out in some ways. I mean, it's a little creepy, but it's also fascinating. I think it's a natural. Don't you think it's a natural human urge to? We're naturally voyeuristic, to kind of. Don't you? I mean, come on, admit it. When you walk by a lit window at night, don't you look in? You might kind of try to hold back a little bit, but aren't you curious? When you drive by an accident, you slow down. We are, I think it's built into us. I think it's biological. We are voyeurs. We're curious about what our fellow men and women are up to. And some of it is, well, do you think you think he's going to have a date tonight? But I think most of it, 99% of the time, it's extremely mundane. Sure, he's going to a trapeze lesson, but most of it is extremely mundane and yet somehow fascinating. And I think mostly what you realize is, oh, you know, we're all just basically the same. Some of us have a camera on our head. Very weird. Very strange. 88. I'm glad he could call in. I actually didn't plan this. And I guess he was listening, or somebody from his group was listening. And I'm glad we could get him on. We'll take more of your calls in just a sec. 8888 ask Leo. I want to thank Pauline and Steve and Belinda for hanging on. We'll get to you, I promise, when we come back. Also coming up in just a little bit. One of our regulars, who should we have? I think Steve Gibson maybe with a security update. What do you say? Yeah, let's get Steve on in just a little bit. Leo Laporte here talking about tech and all its varied fashions and forms. I am the Tech Guy. Well, a very good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Show notes are online on our website, techguylabs.com. You'll find a chat room there as well. Click the chat link on the left. That'll take you to irc.dslextreme.com. 121 people in the chat room. Kind of like the kids in the back of the class chatting along with the show. Shuby's in there, too. He takes the show notes, and he just told me that my friend Justine is going to be on Justin TV. She's going to be Justin TV. When is it, Shuby? Tuesday? That's kind of an intro. I didn't know that. Justine Azarek is a beautiful and talented 22-year-old woman, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how the numbers change when you get a woman on Justin TV. Of course, you're not seeing her, are you? The camera's pointing out, but she'll be wearing the hat and the backpack or the fanny pack. I guess that's Tuesday. So that's I'll certainly be watching then. I made an error. I thought it was Steve Gibson coming up to talk security in about 20 minutes. It's not. I had to look at my schedule. It's Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, with another great gadget. Dick will join us in just a little bit. But first, let's go to line four. Belinda has been hanging on so patiently in Los Angeles. Hi, Belinda.
Hello, Leo, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for your patience.
No problem. Hey, one thing you should know, I was traveling recently, and in Southwest Airlines, they have an in-flight magazine.
Yeah.
And the Twit was listed as one of the top five podcasts.
Wow. I am the Twit. I might mention she's talking about me. Twit is my podcast network, This Week in Tech.tv, TWIT.tv, I should say.
Right,
wow, that's
that.
Neat.
That's why I thought you would like to know.
Well, thank you. I didn't know that, Belinda. Thank you. That's very flattering. I don't. Wow. I'll take any publicity I can get.
So,
short of wearing a camera on my head. Go ahead. I'm just saying, short of wearing a camera on my head. That is
exactly.
I wouldn't go that far.
Here's my question. I have a really terrific Lenovo T60 PC, and I do all of my business on my PC, so I use Microsoft Office extensively.
I love the T60, by the way. Great. That's
excellent. Yeah. But I've been pondering whether or not I should give up this T60 and get a MacBook Pro and use... it's got that dual system, so use the PC portions of it for my business and then maybe take advantage of some of the iSuite for things like pictures and music and, you know.
How old is your T60?
It's only about 5 months old.
Yeah, so you've got a Core 2 in there.
I've got a Core 2 Dual. I've got 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Oh, you decked that out. I can tell you right now there's no PowerBook as light, as thin as the T60. I mean, that's one of the advantages of the T60 is how mobile it is.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So how much does it weigh? About 5 pounds?
Yeah, it's not very heavy.
Yeah. I mean, I think MacBook Pro would weigh roughly this. It may be a pound more.
Okay.
It's not as durable because the aluminum case is a little softer.
Mm-hmm.
If you love Windows and you're really happy with Windows, I would say you just bought this thing. Stick with it.
Okay, good. And I was also, as I was listening to you, hearing that Leopard is delayed anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Windows Dell 1210, which is a Core 2, very high speed Windows laptop running Vista, and I have a MacBook Pro and a MacBook. And I tell you, I use the Mac more often, but that's mostly because I'm tied to the Mac with the applications that I use.
Mm-hmm.
You can get Microsoft Office on the Mac, and yes, you can run Windows on the Mac, so you can run any Windows software you need, but it's not going to run as well as it runs natively on a Windows machine.
Okay, good to know. I just thought that maybe I would go to the iTunes because I wanted to learn how to do some of that iSuite stuff that they do. But
well, when it comes time that you want to start doing editing video, burning it to DVD, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, it is easier and better on a Mac.
Okay.
So that would be a compelling reason to consider a Mac. But boy, Belinda, you just bought this thing 5 months ago, and and you decked it out. I mean, it's a top of the line. You got a very nice system. I'd stick with it if you're happy with it. I can see no reason. Now, did you upgrade to Vista yet, or are you still on XP?
I'm still on XP.
Probably want to stay if it's running well for you, and you haven't had any security issues, and you know what you're doing security wise. I would stay with XP for the time being.
Okay.
Although the Vista upgrade works well on the T60.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Well. Listen, I listen to you every week. Thank you so much for your help.
Bless you, Belinda. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. It is, you know, I have to hold back a little bit because I'm a Mac fan. I really like how the operating system works. But if you're content and working and it's everything's working well on XP and you're happy with it, especially if you're doing business, I see no reason to go to a Mac. My rule of thumb, and it's a rule of thumb only because it doesn't apply to everybody. One size does not fit all. Some people should go with Mac. Some people should stay with Windows. But my rule of thumb is Windows for business. It really is a business operating system, business-focused, business applications, business servers. When you work in the home, the Mac is a better choice. Mac in the home, Windows in business. And if you're doing creative content, websites, graphics, 3D design, video, or audio. In general, Mac is a better choice. Although, I'm going to point out that I edit and record all my audio using Adobe Audition on a Windows PC because that's the program I grew up with, and that's the program I know, and that's the program I love, and I haven't found anything even close on the Mac side. And that's why one size does not fit all. Everybody has their own, you know, particular needs. So if you're happy with Windows, I see no reason to change. Coming up, the Gizwiz, Mads Madistrator, Dick DiBartolo with another crazy gadget. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay here. From the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, I am Leo Laporte, and all the way out on the East Coast, where it snowed last week in some weird, unseasonable kind of weirdness, is the Daily Gizwiz himself, Weekly Gizwiz for this show, Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest Writer. Did you have anything to do with that snow? That was very weird.
No, but it was very weird. In New York City, Easter was colder than Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It is absolutely
wait
bizarre.
A minute. Let me look at that sink in. Easter was colder than Christmas. Because yeah, you had kind of this warm spell in the...
We had a warm spell. We had some 70-degree days in December.
But wait a minute. And then it warmed up again last month. It was like 70s again.
And then it got cold. And Easter, I believe it was 42.
Wow.
Yeah, they had the Easter sledding on Fifth Avenue.
Instead of the parade, the Easter bunny came down in your Easter snowware.
That was the Easter bunny going. Yeah.
So today we have something that I have been looking for. Yeah, but Dick, by the way, we should mention for those who are new to the show, does gadgets, kind of offbeat, unusual gadgets. It's not his full-time job. His real job is as a Mads Maddest Writer for the last some many decades.
Oh, yeah. Every issue for 40 years.
40 years.
Yeah, I'm
sick. That's where you know that. That's where you know that name.
Yeah.
In fact, he's on the Fundalini pages of the new Mad that just came out.
Oh, yeah. Well, reasons you should upgrade to Microsoft Vista.
Oh, I like that. After we get our gadget out of the way, can you give us a couple of reasons why?
Oh, yeah, I will.
Because I know the audience is just really interested in whether or not to upgrade. It's a real puzzle.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Maybe Mad Magazine can help you make that choice. But before we do that, this is something that I've been literally looking for. In fact, I remember going into a Radio Shack and saying, because I travel a lot, and you know hotel rooms never have enough plugs, going in and saying, look, I don't want to buy a big, heavy power strip. I want a lightweight one I could put in my luggage. Do you have anything? And they said no.
Yeah, so this is Monster Cable has come out, and it's very clever. It's called Outlets to Go, like outlets, AC outlets, and they make a little 4-outlet version and a 6-outlet version. And as you know, on the Daily Gizwiz, we came up with a new measurement system.
Something everybody understands.
Yeah. So that everybody has to just take a dollar bill out of your wallet, okay, as we speak now, okay, and mail it to me.
Don't say that.
Soupy. I'll have to
remember
tell
that?
Soupy to live. Oh, yeah. Oh, I worked with Soupy for years.
Oh.
Anyway, Outlets to Go is exactly a dollar bill long. Now, we're talking about the 4-outlet version. And if you fold the dollar bill into thirds, fold it up as the way it would fit in your suitcase, it's exactly a third of a dollar bill high. So what they've done is they've developed a flat plug, a very flat extension cable, and the cable on this is probably about a foot long. And then they have, in the bar itself, 4 widely spaced outlets, 2 on each side, and they're staggered on each side, the outlets are. So you can plug in 4 transformers, and it's for 2 things. The hotel room where you go, and it solves 2 things at the hotel room. Gives you 4 more outlets,
hallelujah,
6 more outlets.
Yeah.
And the plug has a pilot light in it so that you know, A, that the plug has power, and B, sometimes when you shut the lamp off, if it's on the same circuit as you've plugged in your computer goes off. So it lets you see at a glance whether the outlet is getting power, has a little built-in circuit breaker. And as I was saying, this is also great if you go to the airport and everybody's using the outlets, you could ask somebody, is it okay to plug this in? and then more people can plug into the little power strip.
That's always the battle in the airport, isn't it? There's one plug for 400 passengers.
Oh, I know. And even if you find a plug, everybody sort of has to be within 6 feet of each other.
Right.
We're all
huddled together around the plug. It's like the modern campfire equivalent.
Right. Yeah. And this little guy even has a little built-in circuit breaker. So it's very clever. It really solves a need. And they've even designed it so that there are little cutouts at the end of the power strip that the flat cord stores on, and then it plugs into itself. So when you travel, that's how big it is. A dollar bill long, a third of a dollar high, and easy to carry. The four outlet version, I did a web search. It's about $18. And the six outlet version, I think, was about $22-$24. But as Leo said, it solves a real need for us people who travel with the PDA and the iPods and the each person needs five or six plugs on their own if they're going to plug everything in to charge it. So it's a neat little gizmo.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm going to buy two of them. I could really use this. Now, it's lightweight, right? It's not going to weigh my luggage.
Yeah, no, it's very lightweight. Yeah. I'm taking it. I have to go to Sarasota this weekend. So.
Oh, you're going for the races?
I'm actually going down to do a little talk for – I'm also the East Coast editor at Powerboat Magazine, and they're doing Best Boat Awards. So I'm the guest speaker at that event. Oh. So I'll be taking my gizmos to – I'm taking my gizmos to Sarasota.
You know, in the interest of preserving my audience, let's stop singing right now. And,
and now, I see you're quite a bit meaner on this than the daily gizmos.
Well, I have more to protect, actually.
Oh, okay.
And what was it before we were – before we started talking about – I wanted to do the gadget, but I was talking about something else.
Oh, yeah. You – I in the current Mad Magazine.
Oh, the Mad Magazine.
I had done reasons to upgrade to Windows Vista. And what I'm going to do is I'll just read you a few. Some are in Mad and some have been cut. So this is
because Fundolini, there's not a lot of room. You have to
That's
move
right,
fast.
That's right, exactly. Fundolini. Some reasons to upgrade to Windows Vista.
Just a reminder, this is from the April issue of Mad.
The May issue.
May issue of Mad. So don't
Alfred
take this
E. Newman,
too seriously.
Right. That's right.
That's what I warned people Newman, if you're just tuning Alfred in. This is Mad Magazine's reasons to bump
right. Leo, I once did a thing for a boating magazine, Ask Captain Dick. And they were, you asked serious questions, and they were just bizarre answers. And I said to the guy, Captain Dick is really Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And the guy said, our readers will pick this up in a second.
Oh, right.
And one of the questions was, my marine dealer charged my battery so hard that it actually caught fire, and then he charged me $40 for doing it. And Captain Dick answers, that is known as overcharging for overcharging. And Leo, they got more hate mail. Who is this idiot?
Get rid of him.
All right, so just backing up, yes.
This is from
Mad Magazine.
Yes.
Reasons to upgrade to Vista.
Yes.
You don't get much email, and you would like to have a new security warning each and every day. You like the security of a solid blue screen on your computer monitor. You like having the latest technology, and after you discover Vista won't run all the programs you bought a few months ago, you have to buy newer ones.
Yay! That's a good reason to upgrade. And and more. We don't want to give away all of
that's
the
right.
good ones because you have to get Mad.
So look for that. And if you want some silly backstage stuff, MySpace.com, World of Mad.
MySpace.com/World of Mad.
World of Mad. And I have some a tour of backstage at Mad Magazine.
Fun. Very fun. And Dick's website, of course, where you can win a copy of this May issue of Mad Magazine is gizwiz.biz. He joins us every week for the weekly Gizwiz, a great gadget or two. This is one I swear I ran out and I'm
yeah, this
and
is yeah, this. This is one of those things where you say, wow, I need this.
Hotel rooms never have enough plugs.
No, they don't.
Or
they
airports. Do That's the bane of travelers. Or maybe it's just we have more things to plug in than we used
to. I think it is. Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous how much stuff I carry.
Thanks, Dick. We'll see you next week.
I'll be here.
Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer. You can hear his podcast on twit.tv. It's called The Daily A geez, a whiz. Now, let's see here. Go back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Steve on the line from Detroit, Michigan. Hello, Steve. Welcome.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing okay on this very, well, nice day in Detroit.
What's the weather like there? Because it's pouring rain at the Tech Guy Labs.
Well, I went out on Wednesday, and it was raining cold, and it was raining, but it sort of warmed up.
Yeah, we got a little late winter hit. It was very strange.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I do a blog site out of my home in Detroit, talking about Detroit pop culture and indie culture, called It Came From Culture City.
Oh, that's cool. Is it Came From Culture City.com?
No, It Came From Culture City.blogspot.com.
Got it.
I wrote it through Blogger. I have a section of the blog site where I do count down to the big events coming, and I do it on Blogger, and I have to type, and I have to reset it every so often. And I've been searching the web trying to find a sort of blog-embedded countdown clock for the site. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure that I've seen a number of these. Now, the problem is, of course, Blogger's a little limited in what you can do because they don't have widgets and so forth. But just as you've embedded live Detroit weather,
yes,
you can embed a bug that would have a countdown from, I think, let me just see there. I've seen a number of, let me just see if I can find the one I was thinking of. I've seen a number of these on the web. Mm-hmm. Where you can embed clocks, and I think it's, yeah, clocklink.com.
Clocklink, that's C-L-O-C-K, link.com?
You got it.
Okay.
And let me see, yeah, it's HTML, so you can just embed it, and you can put a countdown in there. Now, there's a couple of things you should be aware of. I think this site is a completely legitimate site and good, but just remember, every time you put something like that in there, whether it's your Detroit weather bug or this clocklink, you're sending them traffic. Your viewers are going, in effect, to their site, which means they could set a cookie or whatever. So whenever you do something like that, look at the privacy policy. You kind of have to represent your users, because you're making them go there whether they want to or not. As soon as they visit your page, in effect, they're visiting that page.
Yeah, well, I have never gotten a complaint about it.
No, well, most people don't know about it, Steve. But I have, and I have to say, I wouldn't send you to clocklink.com if I didn't think it was a completely legitimate, safe site. It's just something to be aware of. You know, when you're embedding the Detroit, what is it, WJR, whatever the Detroit TV station's weather.
No, it was from NBC Weather Plus where I got it.
Perfectly, perfectly legit. So that's something that, you're fine there, but it is a good I just want to raise that issue that when you embed somebody else's HTML code, you are, in effect, sending traffic to that site. And if they wanted to set a cookie or monitor people, they have information about your users. That's just something to be aware of. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. Glad you're here today, and hope you come back again next week. We'll talk more tech, or next time, I should say, depending on what station you're listening to. 8888 Ask Leo. You can catch my presence at jaiku.com as Chief Twit there. That's C-H-I-E-F Twit, T-W-I-T dot J-A-I-K-U.com. Jaiku is a very interesting service that allows you to kind of stream out what you're doing as you're doing it, whether it's just talking about what you're doing, or feeds from your Flickr account, your photos, or your blog. In my case, I've got the blog, the podcasts, the photos, my Tumble log, bookmarks, things I bookmark. They all kind of go out there. So it's a way you could follow somebody and see what they're up to. Kind of like Twitter. Justin mentioned Twitter. I kind of got into this whole idea through Twitter.com, and then I discovered Jaiku, which is even a richer experience and very cool, very neat. jaiku.com. Line 2, Nash, Houston, Texas. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, Nash.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. I know you don't have much time, so my question is,
is if you can view your security cameras via the internet on your computer.
Yeah.
Is the technology coming around, you think, that where you can view security cameras via with an IP address through a cell phone?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely you can do it. It depends, though, of course, on the cell phone, the network you're on, and so forth, and how you're streaming the video. If it's a, I mean, it's easy if it's just a still picture that you want to update every few seconds. You could do that on a most browsers, on most phones. But if you want to send a live stream, then you have to have a pretty good data network, at least EVDO, which is Verizon's.
I have talked with the Verizon people for many times, and all their technical people. I kept waiting for the Trio 700 to come out, thinking that that would be one that would be able to type the IP address in there and go to it.
Well, you can as long as you have a browser. You can go to an address, but then you have to have. It depends. Won't go to the address at all.
No, is it maybe you have to have some kind of a plug and play like
It depends
dynamic,
on. Depends on what you're sending the video out as. If it's Java, for instance, you'd have to have that particular Java support in that browser on that phone. So do you know what the video is being sent out as? Is it a Java client? Is it just, what is the streaming video sent out as?
Well, I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not,
so that's what you need to solve. You need to look at whatever camera you're using and read the manual or the help files and find out. Or even just look at that page in a regular browser on a computer and figure out, is it a Windows media file? What is being sent out here? And then you need to have a browser on the phone that supports that.
Okay. Would you say, like a browser like Google or...
No, a browser would be the browsing software. On the computer, be it Internet Explorer Firefox. On your phone, it's usually, depending on...
Is it Windows Mobile or something like that?
Yeah, if it's Windows Mobile, it's kind of a stripped-down Internet Explorer. I would look at, if it won't do it on the browser you've got, many cases you can download Opera. Opera makes mobile. Yes, free mobile browsers, opera.com. In fact, you might want to look at Opera anyway. Opera 9.2 came out this week for desktops as well as phones. They make very good portable browsers with very good support for these additional technologies. It's really just a match between the hardware... on the phone, the bandwidth you've got on the phone. If you're on Verizon, you've got enough bandwidth. Singular now, AT&T has upgraded their bandwidth with HSDPA in some markets. That's even better. Otherwise, you can use a Singular Evdo. If you're on Edge, if you're with T-Mobile, and you've got Edge, then it's probably, it depends how much data you're sending out. Then you have to have the software on the phone to view whatever it is, just as you would on any computer. If your browser on your desktop doesn't support Windows Media Player, you can't watch it either. So you've got to figure out what's the stream being sent out as, and then now that it's being sent out, what do I need on the phone side to do this? All of this is very early days. Think of it, we're almost with the phone, we're almost as we were with computers 10, 15 years ago. I mean, at least we've got the internet, but it's slow. A lot of the technologies aren't supported. And companies are working very hard on this. Opera does a very good mobile browser. It's coming on a lot of phones these days. Nokia, if you have a Nokia phone, they're updating their browser, their company browser that comes with the phone, to support a lot of new technologies, including a kind of stripped down flash even. So more and more, you're seeing kind of a traditional browsing experience on cell phones. And that makes sense. I mean, these cell phones are absolutely, nowadays... They're absolutely basically computers, with the same kinds of capabilities computers have. It's pretty amazing, really, where we've come, how far we've come. Want to remind you, we're almost out of time. I can't believe it. Time does fly when you're having fun. I'm so glad you were here. Hope you'll come back again if you want more of me all week long. And I know many of you don't, but if you're one of the few, you can catch the podcasts that I produce. I produce a dozen different audio shows every week on the internet. TWIT.TV is the place to go for that. Our show notes are also online, thanks to Shuby, and I'll get in there and modify them and add to them. You can go to our show notes site, techguylabs.com. You can send me an email there, too. If you hear something on the show, and people are doing that, if you hear something on the show, you've got some clarifications, some additions, maybe your own experience you'd like to share, send me an email, and I'll add it to the show notes. And there's a contact me button right there on the webpage, techguylabs.com. I do have to apologize. I have quite a few, several hundred, maybe a thousand emails in that mailbox, and I haven't been able to get to them all. You may not get a personal response. And I don't want to put a little robot on there answering it. I guess I should just say, hey, I got it. Thank you. But I'm trying to get to them as many as I can, personal responses, and I will. But sometimes it just is overwhelming. I just don't have time to answer them all. And a couple of people were concerned. There's a form you get when you press the contact me button. And it looks like you have to pay $20 to get an iName. You don't. Just put your regular address in there. It just authenticates the address. It's a way of keeping the spam out of that mailbox. So when I do get mail from you, I know it's mail that was actually sent to me by a human being. I hope you understand the extra step required, and I do apologize for that. Hey, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on this same bat station at the same bat time. I am Leo Laporte. Thanks, too, to Rebecca Baker on the phones and Jeff Cabot on the board. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great computing day. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.